Senator Olson is here with us today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kukesh, we do have a quorum for purposes of hearing the bills. The intention of the chair this afternoon is to hear both bills, hear the first bill, set it aside, hear the second bill, and then ask Senator Wilkowski and Senator Wilkin to join us. They're both very supportive of the bills and are very familiar with them. And for purposes of public record, we'll have the hearings and then ask them to come down before we take any action to move any of the bills forward. So with that, I'd like to ask whoever's going to speak to us first on Senate Bill 164. And Liesl, is she here? Or are you going to speak for Liesl? Well, good. If you would, please join us at the front table and for the record, state your name and affiliation, and let's go ahead and get started.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 164. For the record, my name is Trevor Fulton, and I am staff for Senator Liesl McGuire. The senator sends her apologies that she's not able to be here to introduce the bill herself, but she had some other commitments. Hopefully, we'll see her by the time I'm done.
Okay.
If not, I hope I can answer all of your questions. Okay. In short, Senate Bill 164 rights a wrong in the Alaska statutes. It's a familiar territory for some of you. I understand it's something the legislature has been dealing with for several years now. And what it does is it removes language from Alaska statutes, from the statutes that govern used motor vehicle sales. And this language is obsolete, and although it was once well intended, it's no longer of any benefit to dealers, to consumers, or to the state. And what it does, if you have your packet in front of you, turn to a couple pages in. You should have a sheet with Alaska Statute 4525465 at the top. And down at the bottom there in the lighter print, that was once upon a time actually in red, it essentially just deletes that section there, and we'll go ahead and refer to that as subsection C. And subsection C requires that all used vehicles for sale by a dealer are stickered with a notice. And this notice requires requires that it be disclosed that the vehicle for sale is not subject to Alaska's lemon laws, it's not covered under a manufacturer's warranty, and it's not manufactured for sale in Canada or another foreign country. Now, all three of these conditions that are covered under this subsection are pretty much unnecessary or, at this point, redundant. In that, first, Alaska's lemon laws apply only to new vehicles, so having to disclose that it's not subject to Alaska's lemon law is essentially redundant. The Federal Trade Commission already requires dealers to disclose that the vehicle is not covered under a manufacturer's warranty, so there's no need to disclose that as well. And finally, Alaska Statute 4525470 mandates that dealers disclose in writing whether a motor vehicle was originally manufactured for sale in Canada or another foreign country. So again, requiring that you explicitly state a vehicle was manufactured for sale in Canada or another foreign country is again redundant.
Okay.
There's also some unintended consequences that come about as a result of this subsection, and I have some individuals online who are attorneys and who are a lot more qualified to speak on that matter than I am. I'll go ahead and
That's probably redundant. Attorneys and more qualified to speak, but go ahead.
That's from the Department of Redundancy Department.
Okay.
Senator. So I'll go ahead and open it up for questions. Okay. If you have any questions for me, I'd be more than happy to address them.
Senator Cowdery or Senator Olson, any questions for the presenter this afternoon? Yeah, go ahead, Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, I'd just like to know this on the warranty. Does the warranty follow the vehicle, or if they change owners, does it follow the owner, as long as the other requirements of the warranty are met?
To my knowledge, this bill doesn't specifically address that, but we do have an individual from the Alaska Auto Dealers Association who'd probably be a lot more qualified to address that question, Senator.
Okay, have it. The second question, why is this necessary to have it be retroactive?
Essentially, through the chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Uh-huh. Senator Caldery, the unintended consequences that I referred to earlier are essentially class action lawsuits that are being brought against car dealerships in the state of Alaska for unfair trade practices, and it's essentially because for a couple years they weren't stickering these vehicles, and making it retroactive would address those lawsuits. And again, we also have Ed Sniffen online from the Department of Law, who has agreed to answer questions and be more than happy to go into more detail on that.
Thank you.
Mr. Sniffen, are you online?
Yes, I am, Senator. Thank you.
Could you address the retroactivity clause in this bill and how it relates to the lawsuits that are presently being guided through the court system?
Yes, I can, through the chair. My name is Ed Sniffen. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Department of Law here in Anchorage. And the retroactivity provision was one that was requested by the auto dealers, and we reviewed it. I think the language is such that this bill will be applied retroactively only to the extent the law allows it to. And there is some question as to whether or not a bill can be retroactively applied to halt pending litigation. And I'm not sure what the result of that would be, but this bill wouldn't interfere with those lawsuits if it was determined that the retroactivity provision couldn't stop them. But fundamentally, to the question of why the dealers, I think, are asking for retroactivity is when this law was passed back in 2004, and I was involved in the drafting of the legislation, we were trying to address a problem that existed with what we call current model used vehicles. And a current model used vehicle would be a used vehicle, but it was still within the current model year of a vehicle that were being produced and offered for sale by a manufacturer. So you might have a situation where a Fort Richardson Soldier bought a new Chevy 1500 pickup truck. Then 3 months later, it gets deployed to Iraq and then tried to bring the vehicle back into Alaska Sales and Service for a sale or trade, and that vehicle would be considered a current model vehicle if it was still within the current model year. We had an issue in 2004 with these current model vehicles because some dealers in town were selling those to consumers with very low mileage, and it wasn't just the returns from folks who purchased them from authorized dealers in the state. Dealers were buying vehicles in Canada to take advantage of the exchange rate and then bringing them into Alaska and selling them with very low miles, sometimes less than, 20 miles. So they had the appearance of a new vehicle. And so to address that, we required additional disclosures in this legislation so consumers buying these current model vehicles would understand very clearly that they were not new vehicles, so you did not have some of the protections that you would have if you were buying a new vehicle. So when the statute passed, though, for some reason it seems that it was extended to not only apply to these current model vehicles, but the language of the statute included all used vehicles. And that wasn't the intent, as far as I understood it anyway, and legislative intent is certainly subject to a lot of review of committee minutes and other things, but I know the dealers and myself, when we were working with the sponsor of the amendment, didn't intend this to apply to all used vehicles, but only to that limited segment of vehicles that we were calling current model vehicles. So dealers, I think, at the time, weren't stickering all of their used cars with these disclosures because they were under the impression it only applied to these current model vehicles. And that's why I think the retroactivity language was requested, is to make it clear that it was never the intent that these disclosures be posted on all used cars, just on current model used vehicles.
Thank you, and I just for the record, I wanted to have that answer on the record because we want to make sure that we don't interfere with those lawsuits that are currently in the court system. But thank you very much for your information. Do you, Senator Olson, has a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the questions I have are these disenfranchised plaintiffs there that are going to be there with these class action lawsuits. What's going to happen with them?
Through the chair. It's hard to say. I think some dealers might see what kind of mileage they can make out of this retroactivity provision if it's included in this legislation to say that their lawsuits should either be stopped or they should be limited to only current model vehicles. The law is just very gray in this area, and I think the language in the bill as it currently is only to the extent allowed by law will it be applied retroactively. So I think that will have to be an argument between the plaintiff's lawyers and the defendant dealer in each of those cases.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue, and you don't see a way to go ahead and have something in this bill that we could amend it or add to it or that satisfies that so we don't have some more litigation going on?
Through the Chair, I believe that the language as it is will, certainly going forward, will discourage lawsuits from potential class action plaintiff's attorneys. I don't know if we can do anything other than what's in this bill now to make it, you know, very clear that at least the legislature intends for this legislation to apply retroactively to the extent that it can be to protect dealers who were in good faith trying to comply with the law at the time.
One last question, Mr. Chairman. Certainly everybody's been skeptical of used car salesmen, and it's commonly known that there have been certainly some grievous action by them in the past, but so what kind of consumer protection do we have for the buyers under this bill?
Through the chair, excellent question, and currently we have a host of consumer protections under the Automobile Dealers Act in AS 4525, and those do include disclosures to consumers if a vehicle was manufactured for sale in another country, so they can decide whether or not warranties are actually following the vehicle or whether there might be some limits on that. We also require, and I think Alaska is the only state to do this, we require used car dealers to obtain information about the vehicle from anyone who trades it in, or if they get it from a consumer in some other way, about prior accident and repair history on the vehicle, and those disclosures are required to be made to prospective purchasers. In the used car area, it's difficult to require too much more than that, and in 2002, when we were passing these restrictions, former Representative Lisa Murkowski and Andrew Halcrow and the dealers and the manufacturers and myself sat down and went through a host of potential protections for consumers against these offensive used car practices. I think we came up with some pretty good legislation that balances the field a little bit. So we do have existing protections for consumers. And I know Travis mentioned earlier the Federal Trade Commission requires disclosures already on used vehicles concerning warranty limitations and, you know, and other things and other rights the consumer may have. So we think there are sufficient protections in place that don't overburden the dealers but still provide decent consumer protection for Alaska citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions for the presenter this afternoon? If not, is there anybody else? Do you have more you'd like to add?
Chairman, while we're on the subject of the consumer protection issues, I would like to point out, and this is in the packet that you have as well, that there is the as-is sticker. I'm sure most people who've shopped around for a used or vehicle have seen one of these before. That's the one I was referring to earlier that explicitly states that it is or it is not covered under a warranty.
Okay, thank you.
And I also referred to Alaska Statute 4525-470, which is sales of vehicles manufactured for sale in a foreign country. And that statute essentially says that before sale, a motor vehicle dealer shall disclose in writing whether a motor vehicle was originally manufactured for sale in Canada or another foreign country. Essentially, I'm just highlighting the fact that there are some consumer protection measures out there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Do you have any more? No? Thank you very much. Anybody else in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Senate Bill 164. If not, let's go online to...
this is Senator Cowdery.
Yes, go ahead, Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, I was wondering on this retroactivity or active part of the bill. What if a dealer has already sold the vehicle and it's gone? How can he comply with this if that's the problem?
Mr. Sniffen, are you still online and can you answer the question for Senator Cowdery?
Yes, I am, Chairman. Through the Chair and Senator Cowdery. If the vehicle has been sold and it was sold without the disclosure, that violation has either occurred or, if this bill is given retroactive effect, hasn't occurred, and there's really nothing the dealer can do about it at this time. Potentially, you could identify some of those vehicle sales, and if you could locate the purchasers, provide them with additional disclosures, and basically tell them, we neglected to provide you with this information as required by law. Here it is. If this would have changed your purchasing decision, come talk to us, and we'll see if we can we can work something out. But that's about the only thing dealers could do if they've already sold vehicles.
But if they can't locate the owner, they just can't locate the owner, right?
Through the chair, that's correct. And that is a problem. We have a fairly big transient population in Alaska, and especially with the military bases here. Sometimes owners are just gone, and you can't. That is correct.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Sniffen, online, do you have any more you would like to add on Senate Bill 164?
No, Chairman. Thank you, but I'll be available for any questions anyone has.
Okay, thank you. With that, we'll go to John Cook from the Alaska Auto Association.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Cook. I'm the Legislative Director for the Alaska Auto Dealers Association, and I'm obviously calling to testify in support of Senate Bill 164. I know for several of you, it seems like we've come back with various changes to the Dealer Practices Act, which was passed back in 2004. Slowly but surely, we've been kind of cleaning up things that were unintended consequences, working with Ed Sniffen, who's been there since ground zero. And this represents yet another, effort to clean up some unintended consequences that came out of that bill. There's a few things that are there that I just like to point out. One is that, as Mr. Sniffen had mentioned, legislative intent at the time certainly was not that subsection C be applied to, all used vehicles. And I'm not exactly sure how we ended up there, but in any event, that's what happened is subsection C is what it is, and now we're trying to go back and correct what clearly wasn't intended at the time. As also has been previously testified, this required posting, I think, is not only redundant and unnecessary, but I think it's also very confusing to consumers when you're required to post the FTC sticker and right next to it have another small sticker that frankly, if you got a copy of that in front of you, I don't know that it necessarily would tell the average consumer much. I guess what it boils down to, in our opinion, is that the only party that can possibly benefit from subsection C are class action attorneys. In this day and age, it's a serious concern for businesses and in particular dealerships. Most dealerships in Alaska are still small, family-owned affairs, and quite frankly, litigation of this sort can put you out of business in a real hurry. So if this was something that provided a benefit to consumers or the dealers, then maybe it would be worth keeping around. But, as far as we can tell, there are three areas that have been discussed, which is lemon law, manufacturer's warranty, and where the vehicle was produced are already covered under existing statutes or just plain don't apply. I guess what I'd like to close with is that in working with Mr. Sniffen, his interest is to represent the consumers in the state of Alaska. I mean, mine is obviously to help represent the industry standpoint. When we come together and work together in good faith, and we've come up with these technical corrections in the past, I think it represents a good level of cooperation, and I think it's good legislation. So I think the fact that the two sides can come together and agree upon something means that it's been well thought out and, is balanced between business and the consumers. And I guess at that point, I'm willing to take any questions that you have.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Cook? Hearing none, thank you very much for your presentation this afternoon.
Thank you.
I'll go now to Heidi Anderson from Quality Auto and ask her if she has anything new to add to this discussion.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, as mentioned, my name is Heidi Anderson, and I am an owner of a used car dealership by the name of Quality Auto Sales in Anchorage, and as also a member of the Alaska Auto Dealer Association, I am obviously in support for the SB 164. In answer to your question, I don't have a lot of new information to add other than generate support for this. But as the prior testimonials explained, we have found that the sticker is redundant and it was originally designed for the Canadian cars that were being brought into our market. The language of AS 4525465 subsection C is either repeating what is addressed elsewhere in our vehicle transactions, or as in the case of subsection C1, the language does not even apply to what I deal with, which is the used car market. I also agree that SB 164 would clean up the unintended consequences of the Dealer Practices Act. And the language that will be deleted, I do not believe it benefits dealers or consumers and is only being used to generate these frivolous lawsuits against the dealers. And to put it simply, from what I've seen, not amongst myself, but other dealers, that class action attorneys are the only ones who are benefiting from this current language. And these litigations, as previously described, could detrimentally harm reputable businesses because of this unintended language. So just in support of the previous testimonials, I want to express my support for SB 164, and thank you for your time for letting me speak this afternoon.
Thank you very much for taking the time. We appreciate you. Any questions for the presenter?
The sponsor?
No.
No.
Okay, good. Well, we're back to off net on anybody else. Do you have any more you would like to offer?
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
The only question I have, Mr. Chairman, is anybody opposing this bill?
Pardon? Is anybody opposing?
Is anybody?
We have not, through the chair, we have not received any opposition to the bill at this point.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. With that, we're going to set this bill aside until we get one or two more members in here to finish procedural motion to move it forward. So we will be doing that this afternoon. It's my intention to move that bill. So the next bill we're going to go to, with the indulgence of the committee, is Senate Bill 249. And would you please step to the mic and identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Frank Richards, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
And Mr. Chairman, I am Greg Winninger, Director of the Division of Investments in the Department of Commerce.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we're here today to discuss the Alaska Capstone Avionics Revolving Loan Fund. Senate Bill 249 creates the loan fund within the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development. The purpose is to increase the safety of aviation transportation within the state of Alaska by providing low-interest loans for purchase and installation of Capstone avionics equipment. Capstone is the next generation of technology to improve flight safety and community access in Alaska. The technology is called Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, ADS-B, that allows aircraft equipped with the avionics to interact with ground infrastructure and satellite stations to promote pilots with their known exact location, both X, Y, lat, long, and altitude, airspeed, rate of ascent and descent, surrounding terrain, other aircraft, and real-time weather. Essentially, the whole package necessary for safe flight. FAA sponsored this technology in rural Alaska as a test bed, predominantly in southwest Alaska around the lower YK Delta and in southeast Alaska. The results of those aircraft equipped with this new avionics was a 47% reduction in accidents and a 33% reduction in fatalities. The FAA would like to now expand that technology statewide and is funding to build out the necessary ground-based infrastructure. The hook is that they would like approximately 4,000 aircraft to be equipped with these avionics so that they could utilize that ground-based information. This bill creates the low-interest loan program within DCCED to provide aircraft owners unable to shoulder the initial purchase cost with a reasonable loan to use. The Department of Transportation and Public Facilities supports this bill, and I'll ask Mr. Greg Winninger to define the loan program to you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Greg Winninger, Director of Investments. As Deputy Commissioner Richards has testified, this Capstone project has shown tremendous potential to reduce accidents and save lives. And so our agency is very pleased that we maybe can play a role in this very important effort. Just to give you quick background, our agency has been doing loan programs for many years, since the early 70s, so we have an awful lot of expertise and we have all the loan infrastructure in place to successfully run a program like this. And in fact, a lot of the language you see in this bill was actually patterned after other programs that we administer. As Deputy Commissioner Richards explained, the purpose is to set up a loan program that would allow these aircraft owners that log a substantial number of hours in Alaska to get a loan to purchase the onboard avionics. The program would be set up as a revolving fund, which means that basically as repayments come back into the program, we can loan those payments back out, or loan those funds back out to new borrowers. It also means that all of the operating expenses would be paid out of the fund itself. The bill would allow us to loan up to 80% of the cost of the avionics, and that includes the installation as well. The interest rate we're looking at is 4%, maximum term of 10 years. So on kind of an average size project, you're looking at about a $15,000 installation. That would give you a $12,000 loan, which works out to payments of about $122 a month or $1,480 on an annual basis. Our goal in trying to set up the terms was to come up with something that was that would create a very manageable repayment plan for aircraft owners, but at the same time, it would provide enough cash flow that it would provide loans for future participants, pay its own way, and also return those funds to the general fund at the time the program sunsets. There is a sunset provision in the bill in the year 2020. All of the remaining principal in the fund, as well as any earnings over that time frame, would go back to the general fund. We are requesting two positions. We've got a fiscal note which is attached, and what we're asking for is $4.8 million to capitalize the fund, and that would allow us to make about 400 loans in the first year and then 60 loans each year thereafter. We are asking for two positions, one loan officer and one loan closer. We would only fill those positions if it turns out that loan demand dictates that we do that. As far as the accounting work is concerned, we're going to absorb those expenses. We have some new software that we recently installed that I think is going to gain us some efficiencies in the next few months. So basically, we've not put anything in here for the accounting part of this. So that's basically a quick overview, Mr. Chairman. I'd be very happy to answer any questions you or committee members might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee, Senator Cowdery or Senator Olson? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You already talked about some of the low interest. Is that a variable rate or is that fixed?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yeah, it's actually a fixed rate. It'd be fixed at 4%, basically.
Next question, Mr. Chairman. What's going to happen if for some reason there's a default on the loan to the equipment that's in the aircraft?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, basically we'd be securing these loans with the equipment in the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, our very last resort is a foreclosure. We've got several ways that we can work with borrowers if they have payment difficulties. But if you do end up all the way into a foreclosure, we would have the ability to take back those electronics that are securing the loan.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, and realizing it's a revolving loan where you're trying to get new borrowers to get into the program, let's say that somebody has an accident and that the equipment is destroyed and they have not paid very much into it. How is the revolving loan program going to get hit with that kind of a loss?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, basically we would be added as a loss payee on any insurance policies that the aircraft has. So you've got the potential of recovering through that, through insurance proceeds. If there's not insurance involved, there's actually other ways that we could still pursue those funds. But there is certainly a small amount of risk involved, and we could have some losses as a result of that. But I think those are going to be very minimum.
Mm-hmm. One last question, yes. Mr. Chairman. Is there going to be any movement afoot by the state in a foreclosure proceeding to go ahead and try and either encumber or take the aircraft, the whole aircraft itself, and not just the equipment? Realizing that many of this equipment is integrated with the whole electrical system that's within the airplane.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, good question. Essentially, we're going to rely primarily on the electronics to secure the loan. However, we probably will record a lien against the aircraft. We would not require the typical kinds of title insurance that you would, if you're making a large loan against an aircraft. So we would consider it secondary collateral. So I'd say in most cases it really wouldn't come into play, but you may have a situation where it could.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions, Mr. Cowdery, Senator Cowdery? If not, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Do we have anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Yes, would you please come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Chairman Kukesh and committee members, my name is Mike Stedman. I'm the Director of Operations for Wings of Alaska here in Juneau. I'm here to speak in support of Senate Bill 249, and I feel I'm representing all Alaskans who travel in small airplanes, whether for business or pleasure. This includes the children and grandchildren of every member of this legislature. The safety benefits of having an aircraft equipped with capstone equipment is invaluable. The safety benefits have been proven in Phase 1 in the YK Delta with an overall reduction of 47% in the accident rate. CFIT, or controlled flight into terrain, is the number one cause of accidents in the state of Alaska. Capstone provides for terrain awareness so the pilot can now see the terrain in the aircraft. He'll know if the terrain is above him, the same elevation, or below him. Real-time weather and other air traffic can also be seen in the cockpit. This all provides for an incredible amount of situational awareness, and that cannot be stressed enough in the environment we fly in. My company was one of the first in Phase 2, which is the southeast portion of the state, to use the equipment. We have 12 aircraft that are equipped with capstone, and we fully embrace it. And also from a personal standpoint, I've been flying in the southeast for almost 30 years and can attest to the safety benefits of having capstone versus the old days when we used to just rely on our experience to get around. And once again, I fully support Senate Bill 249 and look forward to seeing it pass this session.
Questions for Mr. Stedman? You have one?
Actually, I do. Mr. Stedman, how often have you had failure rates, or how often have these units that have been in the pilot program had failed in flight or otherwise?
Senator, also through the chair, the failure rate has actually been pretty minimal for the amount of equipment that's actually in place right now in Southeast. There have been some failures, but they have been addressed by the manufacturer. It's been a pretty steep learning curve going into this, but the failure rate has been pretty minimal, to be honest with you, for the amount of hours that we've been flying with the equipment.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could continue, and as far as misinformation coming off on the panel that's there, has that ever happened?
Senator Olson, to the chair, there has been some, but it's been very, very minimal, very minimal. Our pilots rely on it. They embrace it. They are real happy to have the equipment in there, much better than, like I say, in the old days when we just relied on our experience to get around. So it's been real good equipment, and we're real happy with it.
Mr. Chairman, as you go on and equipment and technology advances and we get more and more improvements that are out there, who's going to pay for the upgrades in the systems that are going to be there? And this may not be an answer for you since you're not there, maybe one for the bill sponsor, but do you have any idea who's going to pay for these upgrades?
Senator, also to the chair, right now I can just speak to what we've gone through with Phase 2. Phase 2 is basically an R&D program, just kind of like Phase 1. The upgrades that we've dealt with, we've had some GPS upgrades and also some air data computer upgrades, as well as software upgrades, and those have all been, at this point so far, have been the FAA has taken care of that so far. The Capstone project's taken care of it so far. Beyond that, that's probably a question for somebody else to answer. I really can't answer that. So,
last question, Mr. Chairman, and it has to do with training. Training obviously is very important. People look at that. Who pays for this training as it now stands, and who's going to be paying for it, especially for these general aviation types that are out there that where training is probably not a high priority to them?
Senator, also to the chair, we currently have been and will continue to be trained by the University of Alaska Anchorage. Leonard Kirk's been instrumental in the training, and I'm not really sure exactly who will be paying for it once we get going here. That's probably a good question for Jib Seaplank, who's back here. He may be able to answer that question for you. I can't answer it entirely for you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Stedman, have you noticed much of an increase in your landing and takeoff capabilities? Are you flying more than you normally would without capstone?
I think there has been an increase in capacity and
it's about flight completion, I think.
Yeah. Well, both. I want to know how many times you landed and took off.
Mr. Chairman, I would say yes, there has been an increase.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Stedman? No, thank you for your testimony this afternoon.
You're welcome.
Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify? Yes, please come forward and state your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Chairman Kukesh, Senator Olson, and members of the committee, thank you for hearing us today.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Wilfred Ryan. I am the president of the Alaska Air Carriers Association. My presentation here today will also be representative of the thoughts and views of the Alaska Airmen's Association, as well as the Alaska Aviation Safety Foundation. To answer one of the questions that you raised to my colleague, Mr. Stedman, I do hope that his landings and takeoffs are equal.
Yeah, me too.
The above companies that I'm representing represents nearly all commercial and general aviation constituents in Alaska, and we are very pleased to support Governor Palin's Senate Bill 249. As Deputy Commissioner Richards said, that the original Capstone program was a research and development program established for itself in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and moved into the southeast area. Currently, the research and development project has been completed, and now Alaska competes with the rest of the nation for the deployment of the next generation Capstone equipment on a business plan basis and a cost-benefit analysis done jointly with the GRC within the FAA and the FAA itself. The FAA and the Alaskan aviation industry collaborated in developing and signed a surveillance and broadcast services Capstone statewide plan on August 8th in 2009, which included a commitment from the FAA to deploy roughly $493 million in gross ground-based infrastructure and maintenance and operations over the next 27 years. This plan documents the activities for implementing proven Capstone technologies throughout Alaska to increase aviation safety and rural community access in concert with the deployment of ground-based transceivers statewide. Coordinating deployment of the FAA ground infrastructure and aviation avionics equipage is key to the accelerated implementation strategy and key to the success. To fully gain the FAA's commitment to deploy $493 million within the state of Alaska through the next 27 years, the aviation industry is required to equip roughly 4,000 Alaska-based aircraft with safety avionics. While this is a challenge and also a key to the commitment of the FAA to deploy their full funding, we believe that it's attainable, but only through a commitment from the aviation industry and the state itself. Because more than 90% of Alaska is accessible only by air, and Alaska has the highest aviation accident rate in the nation, an expedited statewide implementation of proven Capstone safety technology is essential for the future of flying safely around Alaska. The Alaska Air Carriers Association represents more than 150 air carriers and associated suppliers. The Alaska Airmen's Association represents more than 2,200 private pilots, mechanics, and individuals with an interest in flying. The Alaskan Aviation Safety Foundation is dedicated to improving aviation safety in Alaska. Together, we are pleased to support Senate Bill 249.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Ryan?
No questions.
Okay. Thank you very much for your presentation this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you. Anybody else in the audience who would like to testify this afternoon? If not, we're going to go online to Leonard Kirk, who's with the UAA Aviation Tech.
Yeah, good afternoon. This is Leonard Kirk, University of Alaska Anchorage.
Thank you. Do you have testimony you'd like to present to the committee?
Well, I would just like to confirm something that was already presented here. University of Alaska, in conjunction with Miner Corporation, with Emory Aeronautic University and others, has been involved in the safety study to assess the value of Capstone, and it has resulted in a 48% reduction in accidents. Prior to Capstone, in the YK Delta, we were having a lot of fatal accidents. The YK Delta was had an accident rate four times worse than the rest of the state of Alaska. Following Capstone implementation, it has now the safest record in Alaskan aviation. And we went from a period of having fatal accidents every 29 days to where we actually went through a 26-month period with no fatal injuries at all in aircraft, which is a huge, vast improvement. And the other thing I want to address is on the training. University of Alaska has been involved in developing the training for the new technology. And as you're all aware, we have campuses throughout the state. And we're looking forward to delivering the training as needed to the participants in future Capstone endeavors. And that's all I want to offer at this time.
Thank you. Do you have any questions, Senator Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Kirk. As we look at the university and its outreach out there, I want to thank you for having those rural programs that are there. But if you have a person that subscribes to this program and puts in a one of the Capstone units out there in, well, let's say some of the owners there at Leckanuck, you got, I think you got three airplanes that are stationed there. How do you plan on having those people trained?
Well, what we've done in the past is we have avionics training devices that are portable. I will be training in, for example, in almost the entire first half of the month of March in Southeast Alaska. I'll be in Ketchikan. I will be in Sitka at the University of Alaska Southeast Sitka campus. And I will be in Juneau also doing training. So this training is quite portable. We in the YK Delta, we trained in Buffalo and Antioch and St. Mary's. And all those things are very doable.
So I guess my real question is, if the guy from out there in, well, I guess there's no airplanes in Kotlik, but somebody out in the outlying areas, is there any way he can get a discount if he's not getting trained?
Well, you know, the aircrafts are going to have to be at an approved repair facility to have the equipment installed, and before he flies the airplane home, we can train him. I mean, we had a gentleman at Tutuliak had his 172 equipped here in Anchorage, and we trained him and his son before they return home with the airplane. So we'll do everything we can to assist that process.
Okay. One last question, Mr. Chairman. We've talked about the 135 operators. Are the 121 operators, are they going to be subscribing with this as well, or is their equipment up without some other reason like Alaska Airlines? How many 121 operators do you plan on subscribing to this program?
Well, we would hope they would all at some point are going to have to subscribe to ADS-B in some fashion. Northern Air Cargo, for example, operates 121, and they were part of the Phase 1 Capstone. And so we hope that they will all participate at some level.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee? Mr. Senator Cowdery, you have any questions?
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay, good. Are there any other individuals in the audience that would like to make any statements? If not, we don't have anybody else online, so we're going to go into just a few-minute recess where we get joined by two individual members of the committee who will be down in a few minutes. We've already sent for them, and they've agreed to come down. They're familiar with the two bills and had a conflict this afternoon, so we'll just wait for a few minutes. If you don't mind, we'll be in a little recess here. back into session, and we are going back, taking back up Senate Bill 164, used motor vehicle sales. It's a bill by Senator Liesl McGuire. The next committee of referral is judiciary. And just for the record, Senate Bill 164 addresses unintended consequences brought about by recent update to state statutes that govern used motor vehicles. And this essentially is taking three sections and taking them out of the current law, and they're redundant pieces of sections of the law. And it's a very simple bill. We have no opposition to that particular bill. So what we'd like to do this afternoon is, having heard the testimony having heard from people online and in the House, we are ready to move this forward. And did either one of you have any questions about these particular? I know you're both familiar with it, and we really appreciate you coming down to help us this afternoon.
We've been joined by...
Oh, I'm sorry, for the record. We've been joined by Senator Wilkowski and Senator Wilkin, and we really appreciate you being here this afternoon. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we move Senate Bill 164 out of committee to the next committee referral with accompanying fiscal note and attached amendments.
Any objection? Hearing none, that bill is moved. We're now to Senate Bill 249. It's an act establishing Alaska Capstone Avionics Revolving Loan Fund and relating to the fund and providing for an effective date. Its next committee of referral would be finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we move Senate Bill 249 out of committee with accompanying fiscal note and attached amendments.
Any opposition? Hearing none, that bill is moved out. And that's all we have for today, and thank you very much for your participation this afternoon. We are adjourned.